more, driving under the influence, selling, or, you know, stealing to feed their habit, crimes like that, those crimes will still remain and be criminal offenses, and like mandatory treatment could be mandated for those. But if you are a personal, somebody who just possesses a personal amount, you know, the small amounts, the law does not change for you. It's the same fine and the same health assessment and treatment is always available to you.
Great. And of course, the results of that assessment may change over time when that person comes back. They may need a different kind of treatment, different term of treatment, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely. So the health assessment can be different. They may, you know, go to a different place that fits their needs better, or they can just kind of learn more about themselves, about where their trajectory is headed. And so hopefully if somebody has an addiction issue, the more health assessment they have, eventually they'll realize they need to seek treatment, and that treatment will be provided to them. And I do think that will be a better avenue for them to get the help they need than arresting, jailing them, taking away their housing, employment, and educational opportunities.
Amelia, Anthony, I want to thank you very much for taking the time and sharing your involvement in this campaign, the reasons you're behind this campaign, and how you've been doing. Thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you might be and whatever time zone you're in, any time of day or night. This is once again Culture in Motion, your twice monthly show where we talk about the intersections between art, culture, politics, activism, music. Myself and my co-host Ryan Danley are happy to be coming to you on cable, community radio, as well as Spotify. What's good, Ryan?
Well, not too much, you know, just trying to get through this week, and seasons are changing and just feeling, wondering what's next. Things are heating up with election coming up, and with the vibe in the air, just seems a little static right now.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like we almost got used to, we've all acclimated to constant crisis at this point.
Exactly.
So when the pterodactyls start swooping, we won't even be surprised.
Yep, a long one.
Yeah, well, I want a purple pterodactyl, bro.
Yeah.
We've got a very special guest today, Ogun Toure. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Can y'all hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Great, I'm great. How y'all doing?
I'm good, man.
All right.
Good.
I'm healthy. The family's healthy. I'm just trying to stay on top of all my commitments. And, you know, since George Floyd was murdered, a lot of the work that I'm doing has become more in demand, I guess.
Yeah, the work has definitely picked up since the wake of George Floyd. And it's always one or somebody that got a martyr out for a movement to get either kick-started and, you know what I mean, just a little kick in the butt to get going. It probably was already in motion, but, you know, it's going to take for that one to be enough is enough. Now everybody's just, like, in gear. I mean, I done seen people who I didn't even expect to be out in the protests. You know, we've been doing this work for a long time, and then it's got people who, just since the wake of George Floyd, been out there since 100 days. And I mean, I'm talking Black women who normally I would see them just day-to-day doing their things, and they ain't stopped.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, wow.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with your work, you want to give us a little background on what you're about?
Well, my name is Ogun Toure. I am the lead and the captain of the Black Rider Liberation Party, New Generation Black Panther Party in Portland, Oregon, the Portland chapter. I'm also regional minister of defense for the Black Riders. I am over Seattle and Nevada. So basically the regional manager, minister of defense. I will make sure that all the chapters are tightened up on the West Coast, basically. Our chapter started in 1996 out of the YTS prison population, which is in California and LA. our chapter is a little different, definitely, than the elders. We know that the elders started in Oakland, California. We do have an Oakland chapter that pushes hard. So salute to the comrades out there, either Ref, Niskari. You know what I mean? We got a comrade that's locked down, Brother Ali, for some falsified charges out there. So yeah, it started in YTS prison population. Our chapter, our mother chapter specifically, started in prison underneath the ideology of General George Jackson, who was one of the Soledad brothers. If you know anything about George Jackson, the dragon, you know, he was convicted of 1 to 99 years for a allegedly $80 gas station robbery. He went on to write a numerous body of work inside a prison. And you can find his books online as well. Look up George Jackson. He was actually the field marshal for the Black Panther Party as well, the national field marshal. So we take our ideology from that as armed resistance, a armed struggle, a need to fight back of the oppressors, because we speak the language of the oppressed. So our chapter started then. I think our chapter in Portland had been going strong for about 5 years. When it kicked off is when a young lady was killed, named Irvea Herring. I was at the beach, I was at the coast with my family. And, you know, I realized initially when I started this, it wasn't to combat police or oppression or anything, is that our people needed a light and needed something, and realized that these young men and our young people out here need something more to look to than gangs and what's being perpetuated through social media. At that time, we had 6ix9ine just coming into place. So he's making these young kids think it's cool to troll and get into gang activity, and not knowing the outcome of this type of behavior leads to the destruction of our people. And we've seen a whole fluctuation just this last summer that we would just pass, a whole bunch of shootings, a whole bunch of killings, and it's a whole bunch of nonsense that was going on. And I think a lot of that comes to do, you know, having to combat social media stigma and these people who's going to get paid and influenced to cause destruction and culture vulture our culture, and then turn it into something destruction. You're basically weaponizing our culture against us. That's primarily what I got into this chapter for, is to give our people some hope, some light. Where Huey P. Newton said we need observation and participation. Our people are very much people that need to see before they do. We understand that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Some, a lot of people want to see. I mean, I'm not going to follow a doctor or a lawyer unless you've proven to me that you can have the abilities to complete your job at a, in your scope of practice, right? You know, I'm not going to follow a lawyer advice on basketball if he's not a basketball coach and telling me how to tell me run plays, but I will follow you on how to do surgery. So if that makes sense. So if we want to lead by example, then I have to be out here and lead my people and also be the example for my people so that they can follow and show that once we put our theory to practice that it works, you know. And we have calmed down a lot of the gang violence. We sit with gang members, we sit with our people. And when we scream Black Lives Matter, we got to understand too that, you know, I'm really not a supporter of Black Lives Matter, to be honest. For one, I live it every day. I'm Black. I don't have to scream that. For two, when Black Lives Matter, it also matters when it's not just police killing us as well. It matters when our people is killing us. So we're willing to take a stand and stand in thousands on a street corner for a police killing, then we need to be able to stand thousands strong on a corner in front of somebody's house until justice is brought out to these streets as well, not letting one person keep roaming the streets and keep killing our women and children just because they're one of us. That doesn't sit well with me either. If it's my son and he's out of line, and he's totally out of pocket, and he did something harmful to the community of taking a young lady's life or a young brother's life, he's going to have to deal with those consequences. He's not going to be sheltered by me. All Black Lives Matter. That's the, pretty much the history of my organization. We believe in armed self-defense, armed struggle. We create programs more than anything besides the guns and all the uniform and stuff that people see in the media. We have programs that's delivering hot food to people, delivering food boxes to people. We have self-defense classes. We have a Black-owned school. We have a lot of things going that we don't necessarily talk about.
So I wanted to back it up a little bit. I remember becoming aware of the Black Riders Liberation Party back in the 90s and being really interested in what was happening, because the ideological framework and the mentorship that the Black Panthers Party for Self-Defense, the original Black Panther Party, had played in my life, my developing political consciousness, was huge. And as I was growing up, I always missed what I imagined their presence on the streets would feel like. So I was really excited when I heard about Black Riders Liberation Party and that it was modeled after the Black Panthers. But I think some of us were confused as to what the difference mm-hmm. in the Black Riders Liberation Party might be, as well as other formations. Like, I know Michael McGee had something going in Milwaukee. There was also a new Black Panther Party that was, I think, Texas-based. Could you clarify some of the differences or similarities?
Absolutely, yeah. Let me backtrack a little bit. The reason why the Black Panther Party was broken up and dismantled was a government-issued order by J. Edgar Hoover, which is called COINTELPRO, or Counterintelligence Program, which was directly built to dismantle and disrupt and prevent the rise of the next Black Messiah. Right. This is the wake after Malcolm X was killed. So that was the spark of like that resistance, that we're not our ancestors' children form of resistance. They're fighting back by any means necessary. They are fighting back. That was the last straw. You killed the most peaceful man that we had, Martin Luther King. Then we had Malcolm X, who was teaching us to defend yourselves. And then you took him from us. The next thing after that, you just had a floodgate of like, we here now. So once the Black Panther Party was dismantled, that left off intersectioning of different groups, which now got spawned into gangs in LA. You had the Slawsons, which Bunchy Carter was, Big Bunchy was part of the Slawsons, which is now known as 6-0, which people normally familiarize that with Nipsey Hussle. Then you have other formations that just kind of broke off into gangs. Now, at that point, there was nothing being done. It was a void to be filled. In Texas, then the new Black Panther Party was formed. I can't remember the comrade's name right off the top of my head who created the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. Then a little bit after that, Khalid Muhammad, who was in the Nation of Islam, went from the Nation of Islam and then started doing work with the new Black Panther Party. And then that became very famous with his leadership and his skills. So rest in Yahuru to Baba Khalid Muhammad, a strong, fearless leader.
One of my people, bro. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so different factions start to break off. Then you got Fred Hampton Jr., who's clearly the son of Fred Hampton Sr., Chairman Fred, in the Chicago chapter of the Black Panther Party. He has the Black Panther Cubs. And then you have Revolutionary Black Panther Party. Then you have Black Rider Liberation, New Generation Black Panther Party as well. Now, the similarities behind that is we still believe in a 10-point platform that all men and women should be exempt from the military. We want public housing. We want decent housing. We want education for our people and so forth. So we still following the same ideologies. Just today, the different faction has broken off and have different factions, because we know that that is still the legacy and the umbrella. And not, so to speak, I had an elder tell me about something about recreating the wheel. What we don't want to do is try to recreate the wheel. And we understand the need for today's climate of little things to change. Like, they didn't have the internet. So I had a federal officer tell me when I was going through my Fed case, you know, the things that they took them a year to get, they can get in one day off the internet. So we got to look at the things that's going on with that. So with the different factions is just to say that in their different geographical locations, they have different things that they got to deal with. I'm still in Portland, Oregon. I'm not in Atlanta. If I was in Atlanta with the new Black Panther Party, I'd probably be surrounded by a whole bunch of Black people. And I would probably have an ideology of, we're not doing no more white people. And that's just where their kind of ideology is at, is that we're not working with and don't need help of the oppressor, because every time we have seen it got help from the oppressor, we either were policed. And I experienced this in Portland, Oregon, just this past weekend. And I explained a little bit about that, being policed, is that either you have informants that will come in the mask of an ally, because at the end of the day, most of the informants and agents that was sent to us from a white person. And it was actually a Black person to do it, if that makes sense. So it was like, we couldn't trust our own damn people. And they said one out of every five Panthers, and it was thousands of Panthers, one every five Panther was in a government informant. You know, one out of every four was actually a government informant. So every time I have a recruitment, I look at them and I tell them, look over to your left. It's 10 of y'all here. That means a few informants inside of this right now, ready, because you don't know what you're signing up for, or you signing up and they already have sent you. Some white person has sent you. So initially, the new Black Panther Party, they don't deal with anything to do with the European and the oppressor or the colonizers' help, and want any help from them. Now, mind you, again, they're in Atlanta, when a white person is probably just like a dime a dozen walking down the street. I'm in Portland, Oregon. My chapter still runs a little kind of autonomous, but I still go through a chain of command. I'm not ignorant. I know where I was raised at. I know I got some good white friends, some good solid white people. We had some people out there with us Saturday. Through a mutual comrade, I know that they were solid. I know they were cool. They played their part. And I believe if anything happened, they would have been definitely on our side. So we run our chapter a little bit different. So again, it really goes off your geographical location and what you have dealt with. Again, the New Black Panther Party dealt with losing Khaled Muhammad to mysterious reasons of illness or aneurysm. At that type of leadership, you really got like Farrakhan. You got to watch. At that level, if you bring me tea, you take a sip first before you give me my tea. You know what I mean? Because at that level, it's like, you got to watch your Farrakhan. You can't just take him as food. And, you know, you might be tasting food before you give it to that man, because you got to watch this kind of infiltration. They still dealing with that type of deal. So with the Panther Cubs, they're just building the political aspect and the political mind of the big body of the Panther. You know what I mean? Then you have the New Black Panther Party, who's going to give you that warrior aspect of like Wakanda. Nobody else can come inside of our Wakanda. And then you got another part, like with us, we created the Rainbow Coalition here with the Brown Berets, the Vetter Lions, Palestine Movement, and the Black Riders. And we're looking to do work with other people. I can have in a Filipino, the people who can come teach us the oppression of their place. We can bring in some young patriots and some cool European people who's ready to get down and stand side by side with us. I can bring in a different aspect. You see what I'm saying? Fred Hampton, you had people that was like Kwame Ture. It's like, no, we ain't dealing with no white people. You got people like other people. We ain't dealing with no white people back there. But then again, you have Fred Hampton was like, well, we going to put together this Rainbow Coalition with the young patriots, the young lords, the Brown Berets, and the Black Panthers. And he brought that to a full circle. So I'm kind of taking that approach with the chapter that I have. That's pretty much the basis of the differentiations of the chapters. Is just some people look at the look, and it was still underneath the banner of Black Panther Party. So at the end of the day, it's like, how do we create this big Voltron thing? This side will tell you, like, listen, deal with the white people, but be careful. You know what I mean? Because history has proven. Then you have some people over here is like, get the political body of the arm. You have people over here that's get the defense body of the arm. Let's make sure that the leg has allies, something that we can stand on, we can run on, because we can't run this race by ourselves. So let me create this allyship to where we got the Brown Berets over here on the left leg, young lords and the patriots on the right leg. We got the Asian Pearl over here, and we got a better leg to stand on. That way when we run politically, we got a nation behind us of people that you did not want to get along in the first place anyway.
Wow. I really enjoy, you know, the way you laid that out, because it's been apparent to me since I've been involved in movement that sometimes we have to be in our silos to get work behind closed doors and amongst each other that we can't share with other people. But in order for us to win, we have to be able to come together in coalition.
Absolutely.
So with the current events in Portland, and particularly this weekend, where's your all's place been with it? And how do you feel about our trajectory and what's going on at the 110, 120 days of protesting? Do you see this where you want it to be going? Do you, you know, where are you throwing your support? That's sort of like, you know, what how do you feel about it?
Wow. That's a pretty tricky question for me, to be honest, because I always still day to day is something different. So it's like I have mixed feelings. And something I told people initially too is that you can't expect a movement to always stay the same and have the same drive of when it started. So initially we know it started about Brother George Floyd, and he rest in freedom, rest in Yahuru. But initially people got mad, then there's the Wall of Moms, then here comes the vets and stuff like that. But we have to understand that once a vet go down there and he becomes assaulted, now you got a vet issue. Once the moms go down there and get assaulted, now you got a mom issue. You know what I mean? So at some point, it wasn't about George Floyd anymore. It was about the police. You come out and attack one of us on Monday, and then on Tuesday, we're going to come back because of what you did Monday. Now you come out and spray us on Tuesday, we're going to come back Wednesday for what you did on Tuesday. Repression breeds resistance. So when they tried to repress all those people and those vets and those moms, then they met a resistance that was no longer about George Floyd. It grew to be bigger than George Floyd. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because that's how I explained it to people. Because some people were having like mixed feelings and like, why is the vets out there now? Now it's a vet thing. It was all that dude who got his arm broke. It was for the media for a minute. It was all about him. It wasn't even about George Floyd. It was about him standing outside, getting sprayed. He was a big dude. You know what I mean? That brother wasn't even being moved with the batons and stuff. So, and then come to find out it broke his arm and hand in so many places, and it was about him for like 2 or 3 weeks. That's just kind of how the ball rolls when you got protests and rebellions. I don't really call that a protest. I think this is more of a rebellion than anything. You know, you can go down there and protest, and I think it would have stayed at George Floyd. But now it's like, well, y'all gonna send the feds out here Monday. You assaulting moms, you assaulting kids, you assaulting this. Now it's a full blown damn rebellion. Now we just out here to mess stuff up. You know what I mean? To be out here to mess stuff up. So what I tell people in Portland, Oregon, Portland will be the hub of this. Right now it's a civil war. It's not a race war. Right now what my people should be doing is building, getting economic structure, buying some property, some land. Honestly, this is white people mad at white people about picking a white president. I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary. And a lot of people say that our people died or fought for our people, our right to vote. No, our people fought for our right to live inside of Black Wall Street and to build Wall Street. Our people fought to have that and build that. Our people fought to have economic structure, to have some kind of political power in here. They didn't fight for us to pick the gun or the sword to die by. They fought for the right. Just like you see vets say, I didn't fight for that flag. I fought for you to have the right. So Kaepernick should have had the most peacefulest protest, and he had the right to peacefully protest. I have vets tell me, I don't care about that piece of cloth. I went down there to fight for your liberties, down there to fight for your liberation. I didn't fight for y'all to be bickering about this piece of cloth because this man chose to take a knee. That's his right. So our stance with that is, like I said, it's our time to build. It's white people time now as allies to say that I know that I have my white privilege, I have my white skin, and these are my forefathers. Like 50 to 60 years ago wasn't that long ago. I can go back three generations and still see scars on my grandmother's back from slavery. You know what I mean? We can't act like just forget slavery and forget this when we can only go back four generations. Most white people can go back four generations and name exactly what that elder and their grandparent was doing. We can go back four generations and not know anything because our people wasn't either documented, or they were slaves, or they were inside of some kind of civil rights movement that was just like wiped out, or they just didn't have much. So for our stance with this is that I say, let them do them. This is their job and what they are supposed to be doing. If you even want to say that it's prophesized, there's no way that you can tell me that all these white people, all these people just of mixed races and cultures are coming together just because of George Floyd. If it took for him, fine. But I think it's accumulation of a lot of different things that led up to that. And people are not understanding. We're not saying that white lives don't matter. Well, you shouldn't have to say white lives matter unless you have to be reminded that Black lives do matter. I know that I see online, I'm not ignorant. I watch that cops have killed white people. They have killed Black people. They have killed people with mental issues, with autism. And it's just like, life matters. And when we say Black Lives Matter, because for some reason, that is what's more publicly shown and displayed in its carelessness. Like, I've seen white people die, but I also seen a white person chase a police with a gun, get inside of his car and take the squad car and nothing happened to him. But then again, I can see on YouTube, you know what I'm saying? I can see on YouTube. I don't know if y'all seen that. Like, he was like, ah, he started chasing the police officer, the squad and everything. I was like, wow, okay. Then you see a brother running down the street and running away from a cop because he in fear for his life and get shot in the back. Or Tamir Rice, who's 7 years old, toy gun. They said it's a toy gun, get shot in the back. George Zimmerman, they told him, leave the boy alone, don't follow him. He follows him, and somehow it still happens. Then we have Breonna Taylor, the only guy who got charged was for not shooting her. So everybody who did bullet did hit her were let free. His charge was basically then none of your bullets didn't hit her. Like, I don't even know how that works. So that's what we mean, like Black Lives. That's what I know they mean by Black Lives Matter. You know what I mean? But our stance is just with my people, with my writers, and what Black Panther's been doing is just building, training, getting ready for whatever that might come about. I'm not going to vote for Biden because he had weak gun laws. He had a hand in 1994 crime bill. I didn't want to vote for Hillary. She called Black kids super predators, and her husband was involved definitely inside of that three-strike law. So it's like, Trump is bad. Yeah, he's bad. Well, I mean, we could be worse or we could be a little bit better off. But at the end of the day, I'm still working. I'm still doing what I'm doing. Trump really didn't affect my everyday living. He's just a-hole who shouldn't be in office, you know what I'm saying? So that's just my thing. I'm just like, you can let Snoop in there today. I still probably, if he wasn't doing right by the people, I still wouldn't be rocking with him. And we got to remember, Snoop was rocking with Trump just a few years ago, too.
Right, so, right.
With this last weekend here, with all the turmoil and the 20,000 Proud Boys that were in other far right factions that were supposed to show up, you know, how does that all play out?
Well, let's get it right. They were inspected 20,000. They only had about 200. You only had 200, bro.
You know, I had to go get the bulletproof vest just to go speak because somebody had screenshotted a bunch of the stuff they were saying to each other online, right? So I took it serious. Right. I'm like, if y'all going on hunting parties down, I'm not going to walk out there without some type of protection. But I'm glad to know that their thing didn't really turn out like they hoped it would.
I'm going to break it down for you. I'm going to tell you something. They thing didn't turn out how it's supposed to, right? And come to find out, their numbers was really low than what was targeted, the numbers. They were expecting 20,000, some crazy number. Like, the state went to state of emergency. They went to a state of emergency. It only had, like, 200 to 300 people down there, bro. It was, like, crazy. So the thing about that, too, they had firearms. They had all that stuff down there and stuff. The only place that had any problems was they stuff. They backed the blue, right? And the blue took their firearms, took six of their paintball guns, took their shields, took all their medieval weapons, their bats. They took all this stuff, right? And then you had us on MLK protecting one of our black historic businesses that I don't really want to say because it's going to they'll figure it out. But this is the black, very first ever in Portland, Oregon, black open carry 2A demonstration. We stood right on MLK with 50 cal sniper rifles, with AR-15s and SKSs, and we had different nationalities of people out there, from brown people to a few white people to some black people. And it's the first time that Portland ever seen it wasn't a protest or a counter protest. I wanted to make sure that I kept the political part out of it and just let us exercise our Second Amendment rights and let's see what happens. Sure enough, the police was riding up and down on their paddy wagons up and down MLK, and they didn't pay us any kind of mind. So I think that was a successful mission. In guerrilla warfare, they call that area superiority. Area superiority means you just go hold down an area for a set amount of time and then make sure that your enemy doesn't have any kind of way to interfere with what you have going on. And I think that's what we did, because I'm pretty sure the police initial thing was to keep these protests totally separated from each other. Don't let them get to each other. And I'm pretty sure this is the first time they've seen black folks out there, you know, people of color with real guns. And I'm pretty sure they're legal, and we can't say anything to them because, for one, we're on private property. For two, we were exercising our rights. And if I'm a gang member and I'm not supposed to have it, I'm probably not just going to stand outside today with an AR-15 and knowing that my PO might see this or I might get violated, right? So they've, like, got to assume that these are legit people. So just leave them alone. And we have too much going on to go check all of these people's guns to see if they registered and all this other stuff, right? So they left us all the way alone. So I think that was definitely a win for us, a win for the community, a win for the 2A community, especially when it's our people that's doing it, because we're not so used to seeing it, especially in Portland, Oregon. So our stance this weekend was just to hold down and protect a business, just as they would if we go to Coos Bay or we go out to Salem. They'd be out there protecting their businesses because they don't want Antifa to burn down businesses or vandalize their stuff. Well, I'm going to do the same thing for our business. We got the right to do that. Again, that was basically our demonstration this past weekend. I wasn't concerned about where they was going, what they were doing, but I'm pretty sure the officers told him, don't let them go up MLK. They go up MLK screaming at these Trump signs and antagonizing, and they got guns. It's going to be war in the middle of MLK. So don't let them go. We didn't see one Trump flag. No, we didn't see. We seen one, but he didn't even look at us.
He looked at you before y'all looking at you and then looked away. That's what he did. I'm glad none of y'all shot yourselves in the groin out there.
Nah, man. I talked to Grandmaster Jay, man. I was like, man, what happened, man? Yeah, man, somebody out there passing out, man. We made sure we had water. our soldiers was hydrated. That soldier out there said he got dehydrated and shot somebody and shot two of his comrades. I said, listen, we can't be having no bloopers out here like that.
Right. Yeah, I was actually referring to the Trump supporter out here that shot himself in the groin out in Lincoln City. You didn't hear about it. Yeah, you look it up. You
say, what?
Oh, but so many memes about it. He was showing off his gun, and not only was he not licensed to have it, but when he went to put it back in his pants, he shot himself in his stuff. It's a lot of good jokes.
See, he's showing stuff off. I made a point. When he started our stuff, I checked everybody's weapon, made sure that it was unloaded and everything else. That way, when they did, whoever had they permit to make sure that it was loaded, that it was loaded after I checked all firearms. You know what I mean? Right. And I told him, don't pull it out. It's not a toy. Somebody want to see your 45, leave it in. You a soldier, you on post, don't pull it out. And that's what happened with the Trump support. He want to show it off and doing all this extra stuff. And
he was at a grocery store.
We ain't doing that. We got discipline over here.
He's in a grocery what? Store.
Oh, I did hear about that. No, I did hear about that. Yeah, it was at a checkout.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. I know. I heard about that. Yeah. Wow.
So look, man, Ogun, I want to thank you for coming and talking to us at Culture Emotion.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out to him, Ryan. In closing, just for our listeners, what can people do if they want to support the Black Riders Liberation Party, Black Panther Party?
If you want to support us, we definitely take donations. We have a Cash App, which is Marathon Tactical 2019. Of course, put the little dollar sign symbol. Again, it's Marathon Tactical 2019. You can donate over there. So like I said, when we go out and we have demonstrations, we out for everybody. We want to educate everybody, white people included. You know what I mean? We are not racist people. We still don't hold that bone in our body. We are just very cautious, but we are very cautious of our people as well. So we can't really act like a black face in a high place means freedom. You know what I'm saying? So we know William O'Neill's are out there and agents are out there waiting and people are fighting cases. So we know that. So if you want to help us out, you can find me on Facebook, Ogun Toure, T-O-U-R-E. And just help out much as you can. Stand by the people who standing by you, because at the end of the day, it's only a matter of time before the government take away all your civil liberties and you won't be able to maneuver in things day to day. I mean, we've seen what COVID is. COVID is real, but we see how our lives are now still immediately dictated. How many people can go in and out of store? There's a coin shortage. There's like a money shortage of some reason. Somehow we got a money shortage of in a place that prints their own money. Certain things are not going to be accessible and available to you in the later future. Get with the people who's talking about that and support the people who's talking about that so you can have a better leg to stand on in the near future. So it just doesn't be a surprise. My partner said he went to the bank and they couldn't give him money back, or, you know, there's a change shortage. So people are not even giving you your change correctly. So the world as we knew it, it's not going to be the same. Get with some like-minded people, because 3/4 of Israel might not make it. Don't be the ones that ain't gonna make it, because I can't take you. You can't, like I said, you can't stand next to me and do attack reload, emergency reload, or you got some rations, some preparation. You are either an asset or a liability.
But well, we do appreciate it. And thanks to all the listeners for checking in, and check back soon.
All right, y'all. Peace out.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Easter Seals Walk With Me on Saturday, October 24th at 12 p.m., streaming online. Easter Seals is looking for volunteers to